I'm Rufilo Mpakanyane, standing in for Zanya Musaka this afternoon, with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. This next portion of the show is dedicated to looking at youth stories from the front line in the battle against unemployment. It is Youth Day, and it's always a good idea to also have realistic conversations about where we are as a country, how we're faring, and where we just need to, quite frankly, pull up our socks, right? And I was really, really compelled by an article in the Mail and Guardian, last week's edition, which focused on not just the recent jobs numbers that came out around the first quarter of 2021, but which, you know, tackled or rather recorded the lived experiences of young South Africans who were hit hard by unemployment. And I've got to thank for that lovely cohort at the MNG, Kaya Koko and Bongigile Magupe. They wrote this article and interviewed some rather interesting subjects who we will get on the line to talk to. But I'm really, really excited to say good afternoon and welcome to the program to Bongigile Magupe, who's an education reporter at The Mail and Guardian. Thank you so much for your time, Bongigile, and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Bongigile, you and your colleague Kaya interviewed at least six young South Africans who for the most part have graduated, and one of whom has graduated, never worked in her field of choice or study at all, or who have been able to finish their studies and perhaps work in their chosen careers or chosen fields for a short time, but have been unemployed for as long as 9 years, for instance. Talk to me about the process of putting together this feature, finding these unemployed graduates. First of all, was it even that difficult to find these subjects?
So the process was, what the conversation that we had in the newsroom was that, you know, oftentimes when these statistics are released or when these numbers are released, it's always just numbers, and we never take the time to actually just think deeply that these are actually people, you know, these are real people. So that was the thought process, and then we then embarked on this, just, you know, let's find these people who are affected by this. And as you rightly put it, it wasn't difficult to find them, because there are many unemployed young people in South Africa, and therefore then it was not difficult for either myself or Kaya to find these people. We spoke to our friends, we spoke to our neighbors, and that's how we were able to interview these young people, some of whom you have rightly said that have been unemployed for 9 years. Since the person graduated, they have never been employed at all.
Well, one of the people you did manage to interview, in fact, one of the people that you do kickstart the feature on, the write-up with, is Chinakaho. Is Chinakaho Nemudivido from Lwamondo in Bembe, in Limpopo. And we do have Chinakaho on the line. Welcome to the program. Thank you so much for your time. Good afternoon. Chinakaho.
Hi.
Thanks for your time today. Thank you for being available for this conversation.
Thank you.
Now, we're starting off with you this afternoon, and I understand that you did study geology, but you've never utilized your degree. When did it become apparent to you that you actually had to start your own business?
It started when I finished my degree in 2013, and then I did my honors in 2014. And then in 2017, I had a previous, but I got an internship. I won an internship in process control. So when I got that, I just saved up for,
No worries. Take your time.
And then I saved up for the money that I was being paid, and then I just started that business.
And by that business, you mean you started your chicken farming business. Why chicken farming? Was that something, or was that a skill that you already had been introduced to, exposed to through your family or your community? How did you decide on chicken farming as a way to go forward?
Okay, basically, I used to have a history of farming. My family was into farming. And then chicken farming, specifically because I grew up in a village where there was just a limit of chickens. And most of the people want fresh chicken these days. So I just thought maybe it would help the people around in the village to get the chickens.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And how is business, Chinakaho? How's business doing these days, your chicken farming business?
It's very challenging. Honestly, it's very challenging because I haven't got any funding. So with that small amount that I had to save up for, I just have to make sure that each and every time I just have to do it myself. So without getting any funding from the government, it's difficult. You cannot really grow your business because you need a little bit of capital. So I'm still in that 200 to 300 chickens, which is not that much, whereby I can survive.
Chinakaho, I'm going to ask you to hold on the line. We do have another one of the young people that were featured in the article that you were interviewed for joining us on the program as well. And you know, Bongigile, it's quite an interesting job that you guys did, which was, you know, speak to people who ostensibly should have no hope or are living with difficult circumstances. But the through line with all the subjects of your article is the fact that they decided that I'm going to do something for myself, because if I wait or keep on sending out CVs or hoping for the best, I'll be waiting a long time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we picked up. But I mean, even in that, them trying to do something and not waiting for the job, it's also just quite it's taking a lot from them. Like when we were speaking to them, it had to take a lot for you, because some of them they come from villages, some of them they come from townships, and you would know that once you go to varsity, people are already looking at you that you are going to come back, you are going to have a car and all of those things, and now you are just sitting at home and teaching kids English and being paid 10,000. So, and being paid 10 rand, I mean, a lesson. So it's taken a lot out of them. And I think one of them that we spoke to, who did a sociology degree and later did a certificate into a teaching, and she hoped that she would find a good paying teaching job, but she hasn't found a job yet as a teacher, and she ended up now, she's now working at a low fee a school in East London. And when I was speaking to her, I mean, you could just, even in the voice, you know, you could just feel the pain in her voice when she was telling her story. And I think also some of these young people that we spoke to, it's also that thing that when we spoke to them, they've been wanting for someone to just listen to the pain that they are going through. And the emotions that were just in them when you were speaking to them, I mean, when you put down the phone, you just feel like so defeated yourself, because these are young people, and, you know, these are young people with aspirations. These are young people who thought that, you know, they could do something differently in their homes, but now they just find themselves like with just no hope. And I mean, in the store.
I wonder, Bongengile, if you got a sense from any of these, the people that you did talk to and chat to, that they wish they'd had a sort of different view of the world or the possibilities before they chose either, you know, the degrees or the courses that they studied, or if they were looking at life through, you know, clear as opposed to rose-tinted glasses. And not to say that going to university is a pipe dream of any kind, but, you know, context and understanding the reality of what we live in.
I think for anyone, especially if you are black in South Africa, the only way of looking at things is that you need to go to university and get a degree. And that's how they've looked at life, you know. But now that they are seeing that it's not as clear cut as that, like some of them that we've spoken to are even now thinking of, you know, immigrating and moving to other parts of the world just to try and find, to make a life for themselves. But essentially, they've always looked at, you know, if you pass your matric, you go to university and you get a job. But I guess now reality has hit for them that it's not as easy as that. I mean, one of them that we spoke to was saying, you know, if I had known, I would have probably not even have wasted my time to go to university. I would have passed my matric and go train as a cop, because right now I'm as good as someone who doesn't even have I'm as good as someone who just has a matric and has not pursued it continued with their studies. So they are finding themselves thinking differently now that they are out of university. But before then, they literally just thought that this is the best way to do it. And one of them that we spoke to was actually saying that when I do meet young people now, I advise them that they need to look at life differently, as opposed to just thinking that if you get a university degree, you will have a job, because that's not how it's going to be for you.
Yeah, and send through an SMS on 31702, and you know, the kind of real conversations that you think we actually should be having with young people or with ourselves as a country about the future, about possibilities, and perhaps demystifying or no longer romanticizing, you know, certain trajectories post school, post high school. We could do with a lot of that, it would seem. Your thoughts on 31702, or drop us a WhatsApp. Let's go to Stembiso Nkosi, of course, who is one of the subjects of Bongekile Macupe's article. Bongekile is an education reporter at the Mail and Guardian, and an article that Bongekile wrote with Kaya Koko is the genesis of our conversation this afternoon. Stembiso, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. You are one of those people who have been unemployed for a number of years. You studied, and you were, in fact, you were able to get a job within your area of study for a while. You worked at a bank, but when you left that job to pursue other opportunities, you were then no longer able to make it back into the job market. And you since then have become one half of a partnership in renewable energy. Talk to us about that journey of finally realizing that you had to do this for yourself.
I thanks for having me on your show. I think it all started while I was working. You know, you get told that this is the dream, you need to study, you need to do this, and this is what you'll get, you know. And I was fortunate enough to get employment in the financial sector. And within that, I moved up really quick. I think I made management within 3 years. But while working in management, there were certain challenges that I felt only someone who owns the company can maybe do something about, you know. So I started to think, maybe I need to be looking at things from a perspective of, let me be my own boss, maybe let me create opportunities for people, you know. And when you're in that employment security, you know, you've got your monthly salary and all of that, it looks easy. But as soon as I left, I found out otherwise.
Yeah.
But I've had multiple failed businesses, but for me, it's always been about, if I'm going to be in business, I need to do something that maybe changes people's lives, you know. And most of the businesses that I failed at were geared towards that. And I was lucky enough to come across like-minded people that were doing this in solar and renewable energy thing. And together we partnered up and we opened up a company called Shiso Renewable Energy.
Sure.
And then through that, the aim is to try and, you know, change the stereotype of renewable energy or solar, for instance, being expensive, you know. So we come up with models to make it affordable. So we've got options where people can, like, join a stock file and buy maybe systems for everyone per month and all of those things. We've got, last time we launching mobile solar computer labs, so that we're aiming at maybe rural areas where they don't have electricity, but it's like a container, and then it's fully loaded with a system and computers, and kids can just use it, and it just uses the power of sun, you know.
And are you glad, Stembiso, so that you've decided to go this route, despite, as you said, the multiple failed businesses?
Yeah, because the thing is, I believe we can't all be complaining about the high unemployment and do nothing about it. Formal education for me teaches everyone how to be an employee. But I don't think we as a country are doing enough to promote entrepreneurs. You know, all of these graduates that are coming out of university and all of that, where are they going to work if no one is opening up businesses, you know? Mm. And the challenges that you face, I feel like sometimes our country is not geared for entrepreneurs. You know, you'll find, you'll hear Elon Musk is one of the richest people in the world, but he couldn't do that in South Africa. He had to go to USA to be able to achieve that. So, yeah, sometimes I understand people that want to get out to do what they want to do, but at the same time, I'm too patriotic to leave, you know? So we always try to find something that's going to work within the South African space.
Well, Stembi Sankosi, we really do thank you for your time this afternoon. Stembi Sankosi is a partner in a renewable energy business called Mshiswa. Tinakaho, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. All the best with your chicken farm and getting that funding that you need in order to scale and grow to mass. And then, of course, Bongile Macupe, education reporter at the MNG. Thank you for this lovely article that you've written and shining the spotlight on the lived experiences of young South Africans.
For years, I took